If you have your Bibles, turn to Matthew 4, starting in verse 18. Matthew 4, starting in verse 18. As he walked by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fish for people." Immediately they left their nets and followed him. As he went from there, he saw two brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, in the boat with their father Zebedee, mending their nets. And he called them. Immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. So this morning we are starting a new series. We're starting a series over the next 7 weeks that the big theme will be follow me. And you saw it on the posters outside, follow me. We will be in the book of Matthew, and in particular, we will be looking at these first group of teachings by Jesus that we as Christians and most people know as the Sermon on the Mount. I thought this would be a good time to study the Sermon on the Mount through the lens of Jesus' calling. So I appreciate Bob in that last song because we sing, "Our God, He is alive." And if we think about that, the God who is alive also calls us to follow him into a way of living. So as we announce that our God is alive, we're also announcing something else, that announcement to the world also does something to us. And we're going to look at that through the Sermon on the Mount. It also lands perfectly as we start this series with what we're calling basically Mission Month. We're looking at the missions at Grapevine. And throughout the month of October, we're going to weave in our mini mission efforts. We're going to talk to our mission committee here in a little bit. We're going to have the stewards and bakers here next week. We're going to hear from our missionaries in the Ukraine in the weeks to come. And finally, at the end of the month, we're going to look at our many different partnerships that we have throughout the community. Some you may know of, and some you might know, you might not know of. But all of this is done so that we can better understand how we're partnering with God in the community and in the world. And so I'm excited about this month. I'm looking forward to this month. I like the text we're going to be looking at. It's a good text. I'm excited about the teachings. I'm excited about talking about our mission efforts and what we're doing. And I'm also excited to see what God will do in each of us as we talk about this, as we talk about God's calling on our life, as we talk about God's claim to say, follow me. And so that's where we begin. Follow me. The text which we just read out of Matthew 4, 18 through 22 is probably a text we really know. We've seen it many times. We see it also in Mark. Jesus has just been baptized by John a chapter earlier. He's been led out to the wilderness by the Holy Spirit, as Luke reminds us, by the Holy Spirit for his encounter with the devil, and is now prepared to proclaim just one verse earlier that the kingdom of heaven has come near. Jesus is ready. He's ready to announce to those in Galilee of the good news which has entered into the world. And let's take a minute to think about this idea of good news. Because Jesus says just earlier, "I've come to tell you that the good news of the kingdom of heaven." Let's take a minute to think about the good news, because we're going to be people of good news. And depending upon the hearer, if we think about news, depending upon the hearer, and I think we notice this throughout the Gospels, the hearer will decide whether this is good news worthy or not. And what I mean by this is the good news that Jesus was proclaiming was not always good news to everybody. To the religious elite, to the lawyers, to the powers in Rome, what Jesus was proclaiming was bad news, or the wrong news, or in the vernacular that seems to be popular throughout all politics, fake news. It was news of an event that God had entered into the world to announce to all creation, that Jesus would bring sight to the blind, to let the captives free, and to proclaim a year of Jubilee. And now to some, this was incredibly good news. This is something they had never heard before, that they would now see, that they would be free, that there would be a year of Jubilee. But to others, it's not good news. But Jesus says it's still news. And it's news that needs to be proclaimed. And it's news that needs to be experienced. We notice that everywhere Jesus goes, he proclaims good news. And what Jesus realizes in this moment in Matthew 4:17 is why we get to Matthew 4:18. Jesus is going to need help. Can't do it by himself. He can't be the only one doing this. So Jesus does what any good rabbi would do at the beginning of his ministry. Jesus calls disciples to follow him. And it makes sense that his first action in his ministry would be to create a community of people who kind of agree with him, create a community of people who would partner with him and learn from him so they too could share this good news that Jesus said has broken into the world. And so we have, beginning in Matthew 4:18, a fishing story. I mean, we really do. It's a fishing story, and it's a fishing metaphor. And I really wish Richard Wilson would be here right now, because he loves fishing stories. He loves to talk about fishing. And if you know anything about me, you know that I know nothing about fishing. I go fishing once a year with my brother-in-law. That's it. Other than that, I actually thought a couple years ago, I am going to get into fishing. Because fishing seems to be peaceful, right? It seems peaceful to go fishing. And so I tried it. It was boring. Like I said, I wasn't good at it. It was just boring. And so I couldn't fish. I had to find something else to do. But Jesus uses a fishing story. And so we have the scene set in Matthew 4. Jesus walking along the Sea of Galilee. And there he sees Peter and Andrew and James and John. Fishermen doing what they know to do. Doing what they've done all their life. They get up. They prepare the nets. They get the boats ready. And then they head out on the sea. Some days the sea gives them a bountiful load of fish. And other days, well, not so much. And this was the life of a Galilean fisherman. And I want to stop there a minute too as we get into this story. Because that's a big deal. They were Galilean fishermen. They were Galileans. Galileans were known to work the land and the sea. And in fact, other regions viewed the Galileans as nothing more than country bumpkins. They were uneducated. They were not sophisticated. And so the Judeans viewed the Galileans as a lesser group of people in a lesser area. And to those in Jerusalem, and we've heard this, nothing good could ever come from Galilee. What good could come from Nazareth? What good can come from Galilee, we see later in the book of John. And if we stop right there for a second, so first off, they're Galileans, so they're considered country bumpkins, and secondly, they're fishermen. It's obvious that Jesus is not going to be a good rabbi, because if he was a good rabbi, then what he would do as he's looking for followers is what? He would look for the best and the brightest. I mean, if you were Jesus, wouldn't you go to another rabbi and say, hey, tell me a couple of the guys who didn't make the cut. I'll give them a call. Or, hey, do you have any references? Because that's who I would want to follow me, are the people who are the best and the brightest. But no, Jesus doesn't go after lawyers. Jesus doesn't go after the great scribes. No, Jesus goes after fishermen, Galilean fishermen. And we begin to see that Jesus is calling ordinary people to follow him, calling four men who are not prepared, not sophisticated, and not the right fit for this job. And yet, this is where we find Jesus today. Because this was Jesus' home. Galilee was Jesus' home. He knew Galilee. It was the home base of his ministry efforts. He understood Galileans. He grew up there. He worked with the people. He knew the vernacular. And I think that this, if we think about it this way, then it begins to make sense what Jesus is doing here. If we go back and look at the fishing metaphor, while it doesn't really resonate with me because fishing is just not my thing, it makes sense why Jesus would use the fishing metaphor to Peter, Andrew, James, and John. It's what they knew. It's the life they understood. And so when Jesus from the shore interrupts their daily task and their daily rhythm of preparing the nets, he doesn't employ a metaphor that they wouldn't understand. What does he say? He says, "Follow me and I'll make you fishers of men." They understand that metaphor. Jesus calls them. Now think about this. While they're Galileans and they're fishermen, and the world around them may think that they're country bumpkins and they're not good at what, they're just kind of unsophisticated, and what good could they do? What Jesus is calling them in this moment by saying, "I'll make you fishers of men," is this. Jesus says that he wants to use the very best of what they have learned from being out on the sea, all the tools that they've cultivated, all the ways, the creative ways they've caught fish, all the creativity they have used to survive and thrive on the sea. Jesus, using the symbols and the metaphors that they understand of fishing, helps the men understand what Jesus is calling them into. "I'll make you fishers of men." They know that. Being fishermen on the sea, they know how difficult it is. They know how prepared you have to be. They know how creative you have to be. They know the you're not going to go in the tumultuous waters anymore. You're going to go into the tumultuous life of people. And you're going to have to be creative to do this. Jesus isn't saying it's going to be easy. It will be difficult. They're going to be living and navigating in a world just like they've lived and navigated in the sea. Fishing with nets means trying to catch smart fish, cunning fish. Now, as he says, you're going to fish for people, you're going to be dealing with cunning people and smart people and even difficult people. Jesus was not giving them a Pollyanna story by saying, "Follow me and everything's going to be okay." Jesus being honest and saying, "This is going to be a little bit difficult, just like the same life you've been in as a fisherman." And so Jesus was calling these four men to follow him. And when I say follow, I mean a real, tangible, full, embodied following him. He is telling these men that they would be free to live with Jesus, follow Jesus, and become like Jesus. When all this is boiled down, Jesus is saying, "I want you to experience and live the good news that I'm talking about so that you can tell others, so that others may experience the good news in you." And I think this is where it gets a little difficult for us these days, because sometimes when we think of Jesus saying, "Follow me," it becomes a little abstract. And so what we've done in the abstractness is we've kind of done what the rich ruler did in Luke 18 when Jesus says, "Have you followed all the commandments?" And he goes, "Yeah, check, 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 check." Sometimes we think following Jesus means just checking a box. I show up at church. I come on a Wednesday night. I'll even come to a life group once in a while. And so I'm doing pretty good. And so we've boiled down this calling on our lives as checking off the boxes that we need to check off for the week. But what we see with Jesus' calling and saying, "Follow me," is that this was a real thing. Jesus had an expectation that they would walk behind him and that they would become like them. And if we believe that Jesus' calling on our own life is more than just the fact that Jesus saves us for the afterlife, which is some of, you know, preparing for the, but that it's more than that, but instead that Jesus is calling us to embody this good news, set the captive free, let the blind see, then this becomes something else. The writer Debbie Thompson says it this way, and I want you to hear this before we call up the mission committee as we think about what it means to when Jesus says, "Follow me." But Debbie Thompson says this to the engineer. Maybe we have some engineers in here. To the engineer, maybe Jesus says, follow me and build my people. To the visual artist, follow me and paint the colors of the kingdom. To the stay-at-home parent, follow me and nurture my children. To the dancer, I wish my daughter was here so she could hear this. To the dancer, follow me and dance the spirit. To the physician, follow me and heal broken hearts and souls. To all of us, follow me and I will make you fill in the blank. This is the promise to cultivate us, not to sever us from what we love. It is a promise rooted in gentleness and respect, not violence and coercion. It's a promise that when we dare to let go, the things we relinquish might be returned to us anew, enlivened in ways we couldn't have imagined on our own. We can't help but be shocked by the response of the disciples. Matthew says they immediately jumped out of the boats. And in fact, we see that one of them immediately jumped out and left their dad in the boat. Immediately, Peter, Andrew, James, and John left their old life and entered into the life of the good news. No hesitation. No, Jesus, give me a day to think about it. They just jumped out. Not because they're better than us, but exactly the opposite. They are just like us. Fishermen, living their lives. And Jesus says, come be fishermen with me. And Jesus looks at all of us today and says, you're a lawyer. Follow me and become a lawyer for me. You're an engineer. Follow me and become an engineer for me. You're a teacher. Follow me and become a teacher for me. Jesus calls all of us to follow him, to become like him in the spots that we're in. Not to change, but God wants to use every gift and create bit of creativity that you have so that those kids or your clients or your coworkers can experience the good news as well. This whole idea of follow me was not abstract. It was real and it was tangible, and it's the calling on our life today. And hopefully over the next few weeks, we'll see what God is calling us into to live and become. But as we do that, we're going to take a couple of minutes here. We have a missions committee, and this is missions month, and so I want to have the missions committee come up. So anybody from the missions committee, come on up here. I know Ron's coming up. Whoever else is coming up, Blair's coming up, so we'll have a couple here. I know we have some out of town. But I want you to get a real glimpse of this idea as we talk about following me. There are people in the congregation who are doing just that. And I asked the missions committee to come up here so that they could kind of tell you what's going on and what's happening. So here's Ron and Blair. Ron's going to start out, just tell us what the mission committee does.
Well, first I got to start out by letting you know there's a bunch out there that didn't come up here. So let's start, if I may, with introducing a few.
Yeah.
I'm going to start at the very back because she hides very well. Paige is back doing sound. Paige is one of our longstanding members. It's a large group. Where's Kinnette? You have to stand up, Kinnette. Sharon Parker, you guys can stay standing for just a second. I see that Sharon Hood is not with us. Sharon is with her family up in Arkansas. It's the only other person I know from Arkansas. So let's see, who am I missing? Blair, of course, and Michael Brooks and his family are in Miami. So
yeah.
we have a large group. Give these guys a round of applause. I'll explain why. It's some work, a lot of work that takes place in the background that you may not see. The second Monday of every month, this group gets together and we work on the things like you see that you're gonna hear in the next few weeks. There's a lot of activity that requires some sort of effort, planning, thought, and of course, looking into the future, how we might be able to use missions to help further the work that's going on here at the church. So a lot of stuff going on.
Awesome. So first question I have is this. Blair, I hope Blair answers this. Why do you care about missions? Why do you care about missions?
I care about missions because a lot of churches I've been a part of, the missions are all focused overseas. They're focused on reaching out to people and helping. And I thought it would be really important to have a local presence because there's missions here. There's missions actually in this building right now. But there's also missions next door at the apartments and down the road. And so I that's part of the reason I joined the missions committee, was to kind of help provide that feedback as to how can we help our own community and get people involved in case you don't want to go to some foreign country and help, because we know people everywhere that need help.
Good. Ron, why do you do missions?
Why do I do missions?
Yeah,
other than Kim told me to.
Right. Well,
Like Blair, we've done this most of our lives. We enjoy being able to use that platform to help others. And really, if you think about whether we are in our early lives, build houses in Mexico, whether we go to Nicaragua, or whether we're helping with the Coat Drive, to me, it's just a way of giving back.
Okay. So we're going to talk over the next few weeks about stuff that we do here. So I have two more questions. First off, what does the future look like for missions at Grapevine? When you think about, give me your dreams. What do you think about what the future looks like for missions at Grapevine?
Well, so the big picture, I think, is pretty easy. We can do as much as you, the members, tell us to do, right? We need your heart and hands to help us. We need some guidance about where you want to go. As the future of the church changes, and it will, it ebbs and tides in direction, it may be that we end up that there's some really great work we could do with young people here in the next several years locally. We do some work that you'll hear about on the last week, but I'll share it with you a little of it now. We do works that Sharon Parker focuses on called Journey to Dream. For those of you who don't know, there are lots of kids in this area that are homeless and don't have a way to get to school because they don't have an address. We know of a youngster that they opened the gym for a young kid that's homeless so he'll have a place to take a shower to go to class. We think that the future might be dealing more with our young people in this community.
Okay, good. Blair, do you have any future?
Well, just back to my original comments about just providing more opportunities for people who don't want to go to another country, who don't have the time, for whether vacation or whatever, to be involved here. I really like the idea of doing the Pack Shack here in a few weeks, the idea of helping out the teenage foster home, support home, I guess it is, and just coming up with more ideas that we can do locally, because I know that a lot of you have friends and family maybe who need a little bit of help, a neighbor that has trouble. We can be a mission. That is our mission field, too. So I just like to focus a little more locally.
Yeah. So there seems to be this little theme, and my last question is this. So then how can we help? What is it that the congregation, how can we partner? What things can we do to be a part of this, to help y'all out, to realize that there is a missions committee? So now that we know that, what things can we do as members?
Well, first of all, there's no limit to the number of people that can join the missions committee, right? You all, everybody in here probably has an idea of something we could be doing. We're anxious to find those ideas. And, we're missing most of the young people today. But, you guys, I'm going to, it's a great tie you're wearing there, but he's not listening to me.
Yeah.
We need young people's inputs. And what could we do with your community? Right? What can we do with, Richard's not here?
Right.
So the senior citizens committee that Richard could be on, we need help trying to figure out what is it that you tell us to do, and we'll go research it. And the last one that we talked about here, Journey to Dream, was actually something that Sharon brought to us through some work that she did, and we are delighted to be able to help those communities. So there aren't bad ideas. Come and help us.
Yeah.
Right? We would love to have people who want to join that committee.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, I'd say if you have an idea, that's the best way to get it through is to come to the missions committee. I got a really good relationship with Anya and Jenya from Ukraine when they came here. So when they left, a great way to stay connected was to be involved with the missions committee, talking about Ukraine, being kind of an advocate for them. So if you're willing to, especially if you're willing to put in the work to help get it through the system and get it approved, if you've got ideas, bring them to us. Come join the committee, and we'd be more than happy to hear them and have them come in and speak to us and speak to the church if we need to. To help raise money and just raise awareness.
I might add one more.
Yeah, please.
Next Saturday, we're going to do that Pack Shack effort. We encourage you guys to come out and help us. Lots of hands make the job go a lot easier, but we're going to pack 40,000 meals next Saturday that are going to go to Nicaragua to feed people that don't have food because of the activity that's been going on. That's one way. And in addition to that, what you're going to find is we've been out getting other churches to come and help us, and they'll be here, which is one of the things we think is a great part of the missions effort, is to also connect with other churches.
Yeah, good. So as we end, this is what I want us to think about. When Jesus says to us, follow me, when he says to the fishermen, follow me, I'll make you fishers of men, Jesus is calling Peter, Andrew, James, and John into their place, into using their abilities, into using their eyes to see differently and to notice differently and to be differently in the world, to be like Jesus. What we're hoping over the next few weeks, and I like what Blair and Ron are saying, is they need you. Jesus doesn't just call them and say, missions committee, follow me, and you do it. Or Russell, you're the minister, follow me and be a minister to people. That's one thing. But Jesus also looks at you and your time and place and your work and your skills and your creativity and says, follow me. And Jesus isn't just saying, follow me to church. That's a good thing. Don't want to take that. I'm glad you're here. But not just follow me to church. Jesus is going to say, follow me to the places you go, to be attentive to what you see, to notice the hurts, and be good news in those moments. But then also, as you notice, come back and talk to the missions committee and say, in my school, this is what I'm noticing. In my neighborhoods, this is what I'm noticing. Because Jesus says, follow me and be a good neighbor. And that's the call on our lives today, to follow Jesus, not in the abstract, but in the real, embodied, follow behind the feet of Jesus and become Jesus. You don't have to know everything right now. Peter, Andrew, James, and John didn't, for crying out loud. They were the most unsophisticated people at the moment, but they still jumped out of the boat and began to follow Jesus. And that's what we're asking for today, is how is Jesus calling you into what you're in now to follow him? Because if you can realize that, then imagine the good news that can be shared with the rest of the world.
One more comment, and I want to. It doesn't have to come through the missions committee. You guys, we know there are individual efforts here that are going on that we are connected to. Mm-hmm. If we can help you, and I only point to Myra, this coat drive was her driven passion. Mm-hmm. If you have a passion, use it. We'll try to help you.
There you go. I think that's the best way to end. If you have a passion. And I know all of you have passions, because I've talked to most of you in here, and you're all passionate people. If you all have passions, if you know about it, God is saying, that's what I'm calling you to be a part of. Be the good news to the world. You are good news. Be good news. And if you have a need this morning, come now as we stand and as we sing.